You're in the grand theme of things. The Logbook.com soundtrack mixtape podcast is back with more selections, all centered around a single theme. A setting, similar plots, maybe something else. Something connects all the music you'll be hearing today. I'm Earl Green. Sit back and relax and enjoy a little bit of free association with music from movies, TV, and games. It's all in the grand theme of things. Welcome back to In the Grand Theme of Things, the Logbook.com soundtrack mixtape podcast. I'm your host, Earl Green. We've got some more music, but today, the theme isn't a particular movie, it isn't a particular franchise. Nothing like that. The theme is a particular instrument, and it's an unmistakable sound. Because today's theme is the beam. This is part one of Tales of the Blaster Beam. And of course, I'm sure by now you've figured out what I'm talking about. The blaster beam is a sound that is most often associated with the music from the first Star Trek movie, composed by Jerry Goldsmith. Star Trek the Motion Picture dealt with a massive, unfathomable alien force heading toward Earth that was barely within the comprehension of the human race, and so a sound was required to define that musically. Jerry Goldsmith turned to Craig Hundley, who had created an instrument called the blaster beam. Now, the blaster beam had been around before Hundley by several years. Various musicians have taken credit for creating the beam or earlier versions of it, including John Lazelle and Francisco Lupica. I'll see if I can describe the blaster beam for you verbally in a way that makes sense, and that also begins to lend some understanding as to how it makes the sounds that it makes. The blaster beam is kind of like the lap steel guitar of the god of the underworld. It is anywhere from 12 to 16 feet long. Several have been constructed by different musicians. It's sort of a blocky square U-shape made of aluminum. Running up and down this trench are heavy gauge strings and lots of electric guitar pickups, which are not only picking up the vibration of the strings themselves, but the vibration that is carried through the aluminum structure of the beam. It's a massive instrument, and it creates an unearthly sound. It can be struck with mallets. The strings can be struck with mallets. I don't know if anyone has ever actually plucked it. The strings may be so heavy gauge that may not be practical. Although it would be interesting to hear someone try it. I really need to build one of my own one of these days. Yeah, sure, just as a side project. I'll build a blaster beam. Why not? And if you hear a great slurring roll where it just kind of seamlessly rolls from one note to another in sort of a slithering sound, you get basically what you're hearing is the sound of it being played like a slide guitar, except instead of a bottleneck, it's being played with a hollowed-out artillery shell. It's a massive instrument. I can see where it might actually take more than one person to play it. The person most often credited with playing the beam is Craig Hundley, who is the musician who holds the patent on the beam. Although others created variations on the beam before Hundley did score the patent on it and is most frequently credited with playing it in its current form. Hundley is who Jerry Goldsmith turned to for the first Star Trek motion picture because he needed a sound that identified something completely unearthly beyond the human frame of reference. And so without further ado, because we're going to listen to quite a bit of blaster beam music here, you're going to hear it in various contexts over the three parts of this particular podcast. This one deals with the beam in space. And so obviously, the obvious place to start with this is the one that everyone knows this instrument from. Here are some highlights from the recent deluxe edition, 3-CD deluxe edition of Star Trek the Motion Picture soundtrack, composed by Jerry Goldsmith with additional music by Fred Steiner and Alexander Courage. Still available from La La Land Records, or you can come back to our website, thelogbook.com/music/podcast. There are links to where you can buy your own official legal copies, because we do encourage you to do that. Here's music from Star Trek the Motion Picture. Thank you.
There's a star beyond time, floating in space, waiting for you and me. Though we're planets apart, love is the bridge joining our galaxies. Come with me, we'll conquer the unknown, where no one's ever flown, to one star.
One of the great things about this 3-CD set of Star Trek The Motion Picture from La La Land Records is that they actually isolated several performances on the beam in their own track on the third and final disc. It's sort of a, I guess you'd call it a bonus track. But the fun thing about it is you have very high quality isolated performance of the beam. It would be a shame not to sample that and abuse it horribly, and that's exactly what I've done. We'll get back to that later. The blaster beam was also heard in 1979, released at roughly the same time as Star Trek The Motion Picture, and surprisingly, it came from Disney. The movie was The Black Hole, and it was Disney's first or second PG-rated movie. I forget if it was the first or second. There were two in rapid succession, and Disney caught a lot of crap for it because we can't have Disney releasing PG movies. That's just not what Disney's about. Of course, now Disney is about Star Wars and superheroes, so it would almost be incomprehensible to see less than a PG movie from Disney. The Black Hole has been criticized many times over the years by people who didn't like it. I'm actually a huge fan of the movie. It's a sort of a guilty pleasure of mine. The Black Hole has been described by many as 20,000 leagues beneath the sea in space. Yeah, I can see where they get that. But the Black Hole was also the home of awesome floating robots, if you ignored the piano wires that accidentally reflected the light in some shots. And, you know, of course, Maximilian, which was a robot that didn't have a single line of dialogue, but would happily kill you at any point in the movie in which you strayed from what it wanted you to do. The music for The Black Hole was by John Barry, who had done most of the James Bond movies up to that point. And Barry had also caught wind of the blaster beam and decided to use it in the score for The Black Hole. Usually only when it would be, you know, the most menacing thing. And it's no surprise that the blaster beam in the black hole is associated with either the black hole itself or with the wordless killer robot Maximilian. Here now are some highlights from The Black Hole, composed by John Barry.
Thank you.
Those were highlights from The Black Hole, composed by John Barry. The CD is available from Entrada Records in association with Disney. Unlike a lot of soundtrack CDs these days, especially vintage movie scores, the Black Hole soundtrack was so requested by so many people over the years that it is not a limited edition. You can order it anytime. They're not going to stop printing it anytime terribly soon. And the liner notes with the CD are amazing because they show you how close we came to completely losing the soundtrack to that movie. Tapes were not well taken care of. Well, at the Black Hole itself, the movie was not terribly taken care of. You know, either I'm sure the physical prints are okay, but from a promotional standpoint, Disney tried to bury it. To the point that the first time it showed up on DVD, it wasn't even released by Disney. I think it was on Anchor Bay or something like that. You know, one of these outfits that that dealt with obscure niche movies, except this was an obscure niche movie from a major studio. At any rate, the music tapes had been damaged to the point where they might just be able to be recovered to be played back once into a digital medium. So they had one shot, literally one shot, at restoring the soundtrack from The Black Hole. So now the complete soundtrack is available on CD from Entrada Records. Also, as always, you can visit our website, thelogbook.com/music/podcast. We will direct you to where you can order the soundtracks for yourself and listen to more than just my carefully curated highlights. Battle Beyond the Stars came out in 1980, a year later than either Star Trek The Motion Picture or The Black Hole, but it also makes heavy use of the beam. It's also one of the very first movies scored by a then young composer named James Horner. The funny thing is, Battle Beyond the Stars was a Roger Corman picture, and Corman wanted very much to steal as much of Star Trek The Motion Picture's thunder as he possibly could after the fact, to the point that he instructed Horner to write a soundtrack remarkably similar to what Goldsmith had done for Star Trek The Motion Picture, including using the blaster beam. The soundtrack from Battle Beyond the Stars was in print for a long time alongside another Horner score, Humanoids from the Deep, on Crescendo Records. That is now out of print. Fortunately, both soundtracks are available separately now in an expanded and remastered form from BSX Records. You can also visit our website to get a link to purchase a copy of that. Here are some selections from Battle Beyond the Stars, one of the earliest movie soundtracks by James Horner. James Horner, music from Battle Beyond the Stars with the blaster beam, very much in evidence at the request of producer Roger Corman, who was really, he was trying to turn his new movie into a monumental space epic along the lines of Star Trek the Motion Picture just by sheer force of will. It didn't happen. The music is actually probably better than the movie. At any rate, there is your introduction to the blaster beam in the genre in which it is most often associated, which is science fiction, which it's easy to understand. I'll get more into this in the next installment of In the Grand Theme of Things that deals with the blaster beam. But the beam is ideal if you have a story element that is beyond human comprehension, because the blaster beam does not create a sound for which the human ear or mind has any frame of reference. And so, obviously, it's not you're not going to hear love themes using the blaster beam. Although, surprisingly, our last clip of the day, and this is a tiny, tiny little clip, it's just an excerpt from one song, someone has tried to use the blaster beam in pop music. Let me look this up very quickly. The song is called I Know Corrida, and it's by Quincy Jones. Of course, a song by Quincy Jones is actually a song by Quincy Jones as a producer and a hand-picked squad of the best session musicians in the world. It's kind of like an album by Alan Parsons. And Alan Parsons is not the guy singing. Anyway, the Quincy Jones version was from his 1981 album, The Dude. And believe it or not, he actually recruited Craig Hundley to bring in the blaster beam and play sort of a counterpoint to the guitar solo in this funk record. So let's listen to the blaster beam's possibly one of its only appearances in pop music. This is a little slice of I Know Corrida by Quincy Jones. I don't know what anyone's complaining about. That fits in perfectly with R&B, doesn't it? Believe it or not, that song actually charted. That's the funny thing about it. In the UK, it reached number 14. In the Billboard Hot 100 in the US, it reached number 28. A record with the blaster beam flying away in the background with the guitar solo. What I've always wondered is, why is this instrument not put into play by some heavy metal band? I mean, is there a sound that is more metal than the beam? Really, there isn't, because the thing's made of metal. Why the blaster beam has not found a new life beyond the soundtrack medium, I'll never know. But we'll find out later, and maybe on the next installment dealing with the blaster beam, I'm going to fix that. Yes, I'm going to fix that. I'm Earl Green. This is In the Grand Scheme of Things. Thank you for listening. This is the Logbook.com's soundtrack mixtape podcast extraordinaire. I'm glad you all are enjoying it. We'll see you next time. That's all for now. In the Grand Theme of Things, we'll be back next week with more movie, TV, and game music connected by a common theme. Just a reminder, all of the music you've heard is copyrighted by the respective composers, labels, and studios. Visit www.thelogbook.com/music/podcast for a listing of what you heard in this installment and links to purchase your own copies. Due to restrictions on file size and storage, what you've heard today was presented at a fairly low audio quality. By purchasing the commercially available CDs or downloads, you can hear it even better. I strongly encourage you to support the labels that are taking the time and expense to remaster and reissue classic soundtrack music. They're making music available to which longtime movie and TV music fans have never dreamed of having access, and I hope you'll join me in supporting them. In the Grand Theme of Things is written, produced, and hosted by Earl Green.